Trendstorm.
Our final topic, picked by you, dear listeners, earlier in a poll on our Facebook page, is Eleap, walking into a trap. Focusing on what might be the next front of the Syrian war. The Syrian Arab Army's successful liberation operation in the southwestern corner of the country has imbued the military with the confidence to declare that Idlib might be next, though any move on this region might trigger an instant crisis in Russian-Turkish ties. Damascus just defeated a motley crew of Daesh and various rebels in a matter of weeks, but doing the same elsewhere in the country might not be as easy of a walk in the park. Unlike the armed groups near Daraa in the occupied Golan Heights, the ones in Idlib are battle-hardened by years of experience on the front lines, and many of the militants there were actually bussed in from other parts of Syria as part of truce agreements. Moreover, the Turkish military is officially operating in the area as part of its responsibilities in this so-called de-escalation zone. These were set up in certain sectors of Syria after Russia's suggestion in May 2017 and in coordination with its Turkish and Iranian Astana partners. But Ankara's presence in Idlib has always been uncomfortable for Damascus, despite the latter's implicit acceptance of this arrangement. Syrian sensitivities to the state of affairs skyrocketed following Turkey's Operation Olive Branch in adjacent Afrin earlier this year, which seemingly confirmed some of Damascus's worst fears that Ankara might be trying to de facto annex parts of the Arab Republic. For its part, Turkey always denied that this was the case and insisted that it only deployed its conventional military forces into its southern neighbor's territory in order to fight terrorism, be it in Afrin or Idlib, though Syria still suspects that it wants to create proxy states there, or, at the very least, buffer zones. Any upcoming offensive by the Syrian Arab Army in Idlib could therefore provoke a military response by the Turkish armed forces that triggers a secondary crisis in Russian-Turkish ties, though Moscow might be able to mediate a face-saving compromise for both sides if it can get each of them to enter into mutually acceptable concessions, such as the withdrawal of the Turkish military in exchange for constitutional guarantees of Idlib's decentralization, for instance. If something of the sort doesn't work out, however, then Syria might be walking into a trap by moving on Idlib because of the high risk this could inadvertently undermine Russia's meticulously constructed regional balancing strategy of recent years and ruin its historically best ever relations with former great power rival Turkey. Folks, I think we're all sitting on the edge of our seats waiting to see what's going to happen in Idlib. After all, Damascus has more than telegraphed its intent to liberate this region. So we're going to speak with a Syrian guest to start off our program who's going to tell us more about this and about some of the challenges inherent to this scenario. That's Mr. Stephen Sahuni, and he's a Syrian-American journalist. Okay, Stephen, how different is the operational environment in Idlib when compared to Daraa? And what new challenges might the Syrian Arab Army face if they commence a liberation offensive in their region?
The operation of Idlib is going to be much easier than Daraa because the last city that's left under the hands of the terrorists is Idlib, and the whole world, especially Turkey and Russia, there's a deal between all sides that they're going to shut the borders and finish those terrorists, especially the foreign ones, the Igor terrorists, and whoever that the Americans want of those terrorists, they are going to move them to other countries. But the Syrian terrorists, they have two choices, either by finishing them, or by putting their weapons down and going with the Syrian government.
Okay, Stephen, so you spoke about a type of deal that might be in the works here. So can you explain to us some more about the role that Russia could play in balancing Syrian and Turkish interests in Idlib and mitigating the risk that the two parties can eventually clash with one another in any forthcoming campaign there? Because a lot of observers are very worried that something might go wrong, that even if there is some type of deal in place, Syrian Arab Army might move in, Turkey might have second thoughts about going along with whatever might have been agreed to, and next thing you know, two militaries are clashing and no one knows where that can head. So what can Russia do to stop that scenario?
As we can see, the situation in Turkey today does not, it cannot hold a military war, and especially with Syria. And it's not in the interest of Turkey to come into a military war with Syria. So I think the Russian government is doing its best for doing a deal between the two parties and between the two sides to finish to calm the two sides down and put a deal on how the Idlib operation will start. And especially, I think that Russians and the Syrians will give something to the Turkish, and that will make the Turkish to calm down and pull back.
Okay, so if I understand you properly then, Stephen, what you're saying is that Turkey is actually weaker than it appears, partly because of domestic, political, and economic reasons, so therefore it's likely to go along with any Russian broker deal, right?
Yes, that is true.
Okay, I see. Well, so if we assume that this deal holds, however it plays out, and the Syrian Arab Army comes into Idlib, and they successfully liberate the city from the terrorists, we need to deal with the day after. I think that's the question a lot of people are asking is, what comes next? Because the whole world saw how thousands of radicals were bussed into Idlib following truce agreements with the government. So, Stephen, how difficult would it be for Damascus to disarm, demobilize, and finally reintegrate these individuals into Syrian society after the conclusion of any successful campaign?
Thousands of these terrorists already put their weapons down in many areas in Damascus, in Ghouta, in Deraa, in Hamas, in Hama, and in other cities. They put their weapons down and they blended into Syrian society again, just like how they were before the year 2010. No one's going to bother them. If they put their weapons down, no one will bother them, and that never happened, and a lot of them are just moving on with their life and forgetting the past. They have either two choices, the terrorists in Idlib. Either they put their weapons down and they blend in with this, in the Syrian society, like how they used to be before the year 2010, before the war, or they have the choice of fighting, and then the Syrian army and their allies will eliminate them. So that's the only two choices. But blending in, that's normal, because the Syrian people and the Syrian government are forgiving. Okay, we want this war to finish so we can start the rebuilding of Syria. I'm talking as a Syrian now. I'm not talking as a journalist. I'm talking as a Syrian. What the Syrian people want is just to finish the war so we can start the rebuilding of Syria. As a journalist, I think it's not that hard, because the Syrian government already many times did thousands of these cases, and it's not hard for them to blend into the Syrian society.
Stephen, thank you for informing us about the military challenges, or as you argued, the lack thereof, associated with any forthcoming liberation campaign in Idlib, as well as the role that Russia could have in mitigating the strategic challenges concerning Turkey. That was very informative, so thank you again.
Trendstorm.
Now we're going to hear what Mr. Adam Gary has to say. He's the director of Eurasia Future. Okay, Adam, Presidents Assad and Erdogan are very proud men who would never want to appear as though they're backing down from anything, let alone one another. And this personal dynamic is what raises the risk that their militaries might clash in Idlib. So what can be done to offset the odds of this happening?
Well, to understand the context of this, I'd like to refer to what a lot of people in the U.S. are saying about the current censorship drive against independent media. What's being said is that some of these American tech companies are more powerful than sovereign governments. In the context of Syria, we can say that the conflict itself is now bigger than the sum of its parts. It's bigger than the Syrian interest, which might sound absurd, but weirdly, this is the reality. And it's bigger now than the interests of the many foreign powers vying for continued influence in these final stages of the war. Yet Russia is the strongest power, nevertheless, for the simple reason that it has excellent relations with all the parties to the conflict, with the possible exception of the U.S., although the thaw that we've seen since the Helsinki meeting between Trump and Putin has made it so that at a military level, the Russians and the Americans are engaging in dialogue of some sort, which is an improvement over what we might have said this time last year, certainly 2 years ago. So what I foresee in this respect is that Russia is going to give an opportunity for both Turkey and Syria to save face. Idlib has been this kind of dumping ground for all of the terrorists and militants, call them what you will, evacuated from previous battle zones, and now it's essentially a global no-go zone where various extremist groups are competing with each other for influence. In terms of the Assad-Erdogan rivalry, I see Russia allowing the following scenario to develop. Any place in Idlib where the Turkish flag is flying is essentially going to be off limits to the Syrians. The Syrians won't admit this, and for domestic purposes, it's quite understandable to see why that is. But in areas where militants who aren't Turkish-aligned per se exist, the Russians may allow limited activity against them with a overall understanding that there'll be an invisible separation lines between the pro-Turkish militants and the anti-Turkish militants, because of course some have loyalties far elsewhere, the Gulf states, etc. And so because of this, I see a kind of compromise where the government won't be fully liberated in the words of the Syrian government, but at the same time, there will be some gains from government forces in some areas. But overall, we've heard stories just recently about leaflets being dropped where the government is asking certain militants to surrender. Within that framework too, maybe even some of the clashes could be avoided if some of the militants surrender to Damascus, mm-hmm. while others are passively allowed to flee into Turkish-controlled areas.
Okay, Adam, what you just did is you laid out a very complicated balancing act that is really intriguing, and I like the way that you're thinking about how this can all unfold. And we know, though, that the U.S. might want Turkey and Syria to clash in Idlib, while, as you quite rightly explained, Russia wants to avoid this scenario. So, Adam, how will the eventual outcome of any forthcoming Idlib campaign reflect in the larger proxy conflict between both great powers?
Well, a lot of this depends on America's relations with Turkey. So there's several factors at play here, all of which exist within the American side. On the one side, you have the stridently anti-Russian faction that would love to see Turkey brought back into the NATO fold by directly engaging with Syria, which the U.S. somewhat deceptively portrays as a 100% Russian ally, even though there are areas of disagreements at present, and there have been disagreements historically. But of course, Syria and Russia are long-term partners, and they almost certainly will be in the future. Then there's a faction in the United States that's growing to detest the Turkish government as much as the Syrian government. These people, however, still, for their own very opportunistic reasons, might want to sow a conflict simply to expose Russia as weak in terms of being a balancer, and then this could further be used to exploit Russia's agreements with Israel. So in other words, this sector of the American military-industrial complex, its wider deep state, could say to Tel Aviv, look, if the Russians can't keep the Turks and the Syrians from fighting each other in Idlib, how can Russia guarantee the deal whereby they've agreed to separate Iranian forces on Syrian soil from the Purple Line, which de facto separates the occupied Golan from the rest of Syria? And then finally, there's what I would like to call the Trump faction, people that don't really care too much about Syria for the simple reason that they know that the war is done, it's finished, its victors have been decided, its losers have been decided, and all that's left to decide is the final political settlement. I'd put Trump in this category personally, and to a great extent, I'd put James Mattis in this category, which, unlike his views on South Asia and East Asia, when it comes to the Middle East, Mattis has shown a very pragmatic side where he may well align his faction of the American deep state along with those who, like Russia, do not want to see a clash between the Syrians and the Turks. Ultimately, though, I think because of Russia's strong influence in Turkey and in Syria, Moscow will successfully be able to keep the two sides from attacking each other. There may be some rogue elements of various Shia militias that are pro-Damascus going after certain Turkish militias, Arabs that are aligned with Turkey, even though Russia would obviously like to prohibit that as well. But apart from that, I just don't see Turkey and Damascus going against their mutual partner, Russia, and attacking one another in the same way that we haven't seen Israel, France, Britain, or the U.S. attack Russian assets in Syria, because they know that when Russia makes a warning, that it's quite clear about that. And I'm sure a similarly stern warning has been given to the more radical elements in both Damascus and Ankara.
Okay, Adam, that was a thought-provoking discussion on the various factors that will impact on the success of any forthcoming liberation operation in Idlib. So thanks again for coming on our program. Now, folks, if we think back on what both Stephen and Adam shared with us today, we can come to the conclusion that it looks like the Syrian Arab Army is going to make a move in Idlib. Now, while we were wondering in this segment whether it would be walking into a trap, I think that both of our guests quite convincingly argue that it wouldn't be a trap, and that Russia is more than capable of mediating between Syria, and Turkey and making sure that neither of their militaries clash in a conventional sense. Now, will that actually play out as intended? Well, of course it remains to be seen, but we're crossing our fingers because it looks like there's a very high chance that instead of being a trap, this might end up being a triumph. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. And with this, we end this week's edition of Trendstorm, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Korepko. Thank you for listening, and take care.